Blog Talk Radio.
During the pandemic, my lifestyle drastically changed. My income came to a screeching halt. You have to understand, I'm a hustler. I'm a legit entrepreneur. I sell things. I come in contact with people all the time. I have to stay safe. I didn't have a choice but to trust the vaccine. And if you live the type of lifestyle that I live, you out here in these streets, and you hustling, an entrepreneur like me, why not do it safely? So I want everybody to take this seriously. Take a shot at staying healthy. Get the vaccine.
Do you want to hear the truth about New York State and beyond? I'm Diana.
And I'm Dean.
Join us Thursday nights at 7:30 p.m. until 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we'll talk about everything New York State and beyond.
Yeah, nationwide news and local news and the tyranny that's going on here in New York State and what the Democrats are doing across the country, too.
We're going to talk about just about everything. Join us Thursdays, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, D&D delivering the truth in New York State and beyond. See you then.
Please check out the Barefoot is Legal radio show right here on Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, that is 10:30 a.m. to noon Pacific Time, as we show you all about your barefoot rights and living a barefoot lifestyle. And for more information about the 501c3 nonprofit Barefoot is Legal, please check out barefootislegal.org.
Okay, class, we want to talk about what we learned during the lockdown. The first question is, what did we learn during the quarantine, kids? Susie,
that government overreach is real.
What about you, Johnny?
We went from home of the brave to home of the government slave.
And you, Michael?
We need to refresh the tree of liberty.
What about you, Diane?
So many sheep are willing to give up their rights because of a little fear.
Very good, class.
Food waste is one of the most easily solvable problems, literally the low-hanging fruit of environmentalism. Pardon the pun, it's my job.
About 20% of all produce never makes it off the farm.
It's because they just look a little funny,
a little weird, but when you cut into it, it's perfectly good food.
It's just a total shame. It's totally good stuff.
We buy ugly produce directly from farms that often would go to waste because supermarkets won't buy it because of how it looks, and we deliver it to people's doors.
Beauty standards for an apple.
This isn't that ugly at all. Like, that's the most common first box, like, complaint we get.
We change that. We educate people. We show them how amazing these fruits and vegetables are.
Have food delivered to your house.
Box of produce every week.
And it's more affordable.
At a very reasonable price.
Cheaper than the grocery store.
I spend a lot less time in grocery stores.
It's an adventure every time that you open your box.
High quality produce.
There's nothing wrong with the produce.
And they taste exactly the same, if not better.
Save those fruits and vegetables that get wasted every year.
And it's delivered to your door, like,
but what? Why wouldn't you do?
Please go to our website, freedomizerradio.live, and sign up for Imperfect Foods today. Use our promo code and get money off your first order. Go ahead and get some organic and all-natural meats, dairy, snacks, breads, and non-GMO produce.
Hello, Freedomizers. I am Broccoli Man. When I am not fighting crime, I listen to the Proof Negative radio show.
I am the Wireza. Not only do I forbid you to listen to Freedomizer Radio and the Proof Negative radio show, I am going to demand you wear a mask and get your naked body scan. We need to protect the one world government. You getting the real information hurts a crime syndicate. Do not listen to Proof Negative. You must now disrobe this instant so I can check your person for a constitution or cash money.
Anyway, listen to Proof Negative on Freedomizer Radio. Weeknights 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. FreedomizerRadio.com.
Now, let's get back to the Proof Negative Show here on FreedomizerRadio.com. Welcome to the Proof Negative Radio Show right here on FreedomizerRadio.com. Now sit back and enjoy the show.
Thank you. Well, I'm so thankful to everybody. This is just the beginning of the impact that I wanted to have on the world.
Couldn't do this without any of the support and the love.
And I can't wait to continue to take y'all on this journey with me.
I'm as shocked as you guys are. I didn't expect to make a part two on this video, but it seems like this theory is getting deep enough to the point where we do have the facilities to bring you guys a part two with a bunch of new content, including DeMar Hamlin's direct reaction and the Buffalo Bills' direct reaction to the entire situation. So before we get to the content, this video is probably going to get dislike bombed by people that don't like my opinion. If you want to support me throughout this video and maintain my standing in the algorithm, make sure you drop a like. And if you want to really support our grind, this is our fourth video in a 24-hour span, so make sure you subscribe and turn on our notifications to help the channel's growth. Now that we got all that out of the way, work! A lot of you guys have been hitting me up in the DMs telling me how much money you've been making on Prize Picks. A huge shout out to my subscriber Spencer Sims, who's made $7,000 off of his picks over the past 2 weeks. If you follow me on Instagram, you'd know I play Prize Picks religiously, and I post my picks to my story each and every day. If you want to try out Prize Picks right now, when you use my promo code MICROPHONE, you'll get up to a $100 deposit match on your first deposit. And if you get any big hits on Prize Picks, make sure you DM them to me on Instagram so I can feature you in future promos. And thank you, Prize Picks, for the sponsor. Mic check 1, 2, 1, 2. What's going on, everybody? Before we get started with anything, I gotta let you guys know, this is gonna blow some of your minds, but this is not a paid video from the NFL for me to convince you guys to get your third, fourth, or fifth vaccine. I don't know how many there are. And if you are a human that got their third, fourth, or fifth vaccine, then good on you. I'm not a doctor. I almost became a doctor, but I dropped out of my biomed master's program to pursue making YouTube content. But unfortunately, I'm not qualified to give you guys medical advice. I'm not Joe Rogan. But I am a football commentator, and I do that for a living, so I do think I know a thing or two about football, and since the DeMar Hamlin incident was a football incident, then I believe this falls into my jurisdiction. For those of you guys that don't know what happened, about a month ago, a tragedy nearly took place on national television, where DeMar Hamlin went into cardiac arrest and nearly lost his life. Thankfully, due to the remarkable first responders and the Buffalo Bills medical staff that did a phenomenal job making sure that DeMar Hamlin had oxygen going to his brain and was transported to a hospital promptly, DeMar Hamlin was able to make what seems to be a really good recovery. He still has a long ways to go, but given what he's gone through, the fact that he hasn't sustained any type of brain damage at all whatsoever, in my opinion, is a miracle. Once DeMar Hamlin became capable of making it to the Buffalo Bills versus Cincinnati Bengals divisional matchup, he made an appearance. Unfortunately for him, it was snowing like crazy, and whenever you would see DeMar Hamlin up in his suite, it would really look like a silhouette that kind of resembled the banker from Deal or No Deal. Now, when you combine that with the fact that there were multiple shots of DeMar Hamlin with him in sunglasses and him with a scarf over his nose, let's forget the fact that it was freezing cold in Buffalo, and this is a human that is immunocompromised currently due to the fact that his body is very, very weak, and the fact that he's even able to make these appearances is a miracle. Some people began to think that this isn't actually DeMar Hamlin. Rather, it's a paid actor or a clone of DeMar Hamlin that is being paid to make these appearances. Now, when the theory was proposed to Josh Allen, this is what he had to say.
Yeah, that's stupid. One, that's DeMar swag. That's what he likes. He likes wearing that. Two, he was in the locker room with us pregame. There's absolutely zero chance. There's absolutely zero chance. That's
okay,
DeMar Hamlin. That's our guy. That's our brother. He was with us pregame, postgame. He was up in the suite with his family, his little brother. 100%.
And in my last video, I thought that this was a little far-fetched, primarily because of the human element of all this. I mean, you have his parents sitting next to him in a hospital bed, and there were some comments saying,
hey, maybe the bag was so big that they were able to suffer through this moment.
I really think there's only a small proportion of humanity that would be able to sit next to a clone of their child who was quote-unquote presumed to be dead in order to get a tremendous sum of money in return that shortly after
if this individual actually died. Bear in mind, the theory is that Damar Hamlin actually passed away due to him getting vaccinated multiple times, and as a result, he went into cardiac arrest on a nationally televised game. If this theory was actually true, you'd have to get the entire NFL and all the Buffalo Bills to go along with it. Now, bear in mind, the Buffalo Bills were devastated the night that Damar Hamlin went into cardiac arrest. Josh Allen looked like he saw a ghost, if you recall that moment. There are some supporting arguments that were also brought in, something to do with Damar Hamlin's tattoos, and the fact that his tattoos weren't consistent. That, combined with the fact that he wasn't showing his face, is what was the primary argument for the fact that this is an actor playing Damar Hamlin. So, as a result of this, it seems like the Buffalo Bills and the NFL may have taken this seriously, or this could have just been the Buffalo Bills and the NFL wanting to post this anyway, and hopefully it does put some of the stuff to rest. Unfortunately, that's not what would happen.
Well, I'm so thankful to everybody. I know that it isn't enough just to be thankful. This is just the beginning of the impact that I wanted to have on the world, and with God's guidance, I will continue to do wonderful and great things. I couldn't do this without any of the support and the love, and I can't wait to continue to take y'all on this journey with me.
And there's a full, like, 5-minute video of Damar Hamlin talking as well. And while this is beautiful, and honestly, I am happy that he's doing well, and I personally do believe this is actually Damar Hamlin. I don't think that some actor is being paid, primarily because if this is something that the government wants to hide from you, wouldn't you think that they would try not to bring out Damar Hamlin at all whatsoever? Wouldn't you think that they would try to sweep this situation under the rug and have you focus more on the fact that championship games are going on right now? But you should put that aside in order to try to understand the theory that is in place. This isn't actually Damar Hamlin. Rather, this is a deepfake. So if you don't know what a deepfake is technology that honestly is really terrifying to me, that allows an AI computer to mimic the appearance and the mannerisms of another human being. And there are people that are actually taking this narrative and running away with it. I mean, take a look at this. There's a person that compares another Damar Hamlin interview with the video that the Buffalo Bills posted. I mean, look at this tweet from this law student. The video on the left is the one they are claiming is CGI. The one on the right is an earlier video of him prior to the cardiac arrest incident. I do notice a very naturally animated head bob on the right. Damar Hamlin is so handsome. This is something that I want to be so wrong. So yeah, people actually believe this. Another tweet is even suggesting that this isn't actually Damar Hamlin because there are still no tattoos on this version of Damar Hamlin. I honestly do see some tattoos there. I think rather it is a lighting type of issue in this instance. Another theorist is saying, I pray that he is alive. We all do. The face in this video is darkened, so I lightened it a little to study the facial features. Look at the eyebrow shape, the bridge of the nose, the ears, the bottom teeth, the width of the face, and shape and forehead slash hairline. Neck length and width red. Damar on the right is a more relaxed mouth. So he's saying this Damar is a little bit more relaxed than the Damar that is being shown in the video, which, by the way, is something that's unfortunate about this entire incident is, with respect to Damar Hamlin, there wasn't a lot of media and a lot of pictures of him from before the incident. Compared to a player like Patrick Mahomes, Damar Hamlin wasn't necessarily a huge known football player prior to this incident, unfortunately. Again, I'm not a doctor, so I can't attest to this, and I can't verbally spar with every person that believes in this, but at the same time, you have to understand, this is a man whose body just went through a lot. So I don't necessarily know how his body is holding up as a result of that. And at the same time, this man is saying that if you had your ribs broken or you had CPR for a long time on your chest, wouldn't you be sore or hurt? Wouldn't flipping your jacket like this be excruciatingly painful? Yet, not a grimace. Wouldn't you wear a brace around your ribs? Did Damar Hamlin suffer a rib injury or did he just go into cardiac arrest? I saw a lot of comments on my last video in regards to how Damar Hamlin should be acting right now. At the same time, you need to understand that his situation and his case is significantly different from the average person that went into cardiac arrest. I mean, the moment he went into cardiac arrest, he received remarkable medical care. I mean, I don't think you guys understand the medical marvel that Damar Hamlin's situation was. He was given CPR almost immediately. He was transported to a hospital that was like 2 miles away. They did remarkable work making sure that he is going to be okay. I never suffered something something like this, nor am I a doctor, so I can't attest to how he should be acting, but I do think the theories that are going around about him can't be doing him any good for his mental health. I mean, I feel tremendous empathy for Damar Hamlin, because imagine if you just fought for your life and it was almost taken away from you, and instead of everyone being happy for you and you serving as a beacon of hope to everyone, people are beginning to question whether or not it's truly you. And no matter what you do and what you're putting out there, people are questioning it. There's no way that Damar Hamlin could really convince you that it's truly him at this point, because it seems like everything he does is being refuted by the people that want to believe what they believe. And at the end of the day, if he truly did pass away, I think this is something we'll all figure out, because if he's okay, then he's going to live a normal life for the next couple of years, whether he plays football or not, which I don't really know what his future is looking like. But if this happens to be some sort of actor playing him, then obviously it's not sustainable. At the end of the day, I think if the NFL truly wanted no one to know about what happened to Damar Hamlin, they wouldn't have gone through the trouble of trying to find an individual to make appearances on his behalf. I mean, you're talking about a football league that canceled the game altogether, primarily because they didn't want people to be reminded of the incident. So I know there's people that aren't going to agree with it, and you guys are obviously welcome to ask your question. I personally don't believe in this type of stuff, but if you want to, you're welcome to. This is going to be my final video on the matter, so let me know in the comment section down below what you guys think about all this. Aside from that, I'm your boy Mike. I'm dropping our mic until our next upload.
Executed.
President Trump had documents locked in a room with Secret Service protecting them. President Biden had documents in his garage and in a think tank that was funded by the Chinese. I think there's a difference. President Trump was the only guy who was actually president.
You talk about that. You're worried about the Chinese and Hunter Biden.
No, I'm just saying.
Are you worried about the Chinese and Donald Trump?
They took pictures. They took pictures of.
Are you at all worried about that?
No, I'm not. But they took pictures of the documents at Trump's house. They took no pictures of documents. In fact, it's not just me who would like to know what went on here. Senator Warner said it last week. He would like to get a briefing. He wants to see the documents.
No,
and guess what? The FBI is saying no, but they took pictures
the issue
of the folders
is not whether,
in Trump's home.
The issue is not whether Joe Biden did.
No, the issue is
the issue is
equal treatment under the law. That's the issue.
No, the
issue is treatment under the law.
You do not seem to ever see the same conspiratorial problems when it's a Republican.
Those were all investigated for 4 years, and they continue
to
do it. You don't think
if they were trumping something up, wouldn't they be arresting somebody?
One of the people
you're trying to create a controversy out of the FBI following up on a tip. I mean, literally, this is what Loudoun County, Virginia school board member. If she doesn't quit or resign before the end of the year, we will kill her. But first, we will kill you. These were among the comments. In Dublin, Ohio, a school board member. You have become our enemies. You will be removed one way or the other. Shouldn't the FBI investigate these?
One of the people they went to investigate was a mom, and they said because she's in the group Moms for Liberty, and because they have firearms at her house, they go investigate her. You get investigated in America for that? They show up at your house? Now, you don't think that has a chilling impact on other parents? So there's a school board meeting tonight. Mr. Jones is thinking about going and talking at the school board meeting, and then he says, you know what, maybe I won't go, maybe I won't speak up, because I know Mrs. Smith had a visit from the FBI last week. The chilling impact on First Amendment free speech is what we care about. This committee is about protecting the Constitution, in particular, the First Amendment.
You know, many of the things you want to investigate, when I look at them in isolation, I think they're fair targets. I think they're fair things for you to be questioning. The problem that when you look at it, you want to talk about the weaponization of the Justice Department. You don't want to look at anything that happened during the Trump years. He subpoenaed data on Congressman Adam Schiff and Eric Swalwell. That is known. He secretly obtained reporters' phone records using the Justice Department. He pressured the Justice Department, Donald Trump did, to go easy on Michael Flynn and Roger Stone. The Justice Department was pressured by Mark Meadows to investigate this election fraud. He even tried to change the leadership at the Justice Department. My point is, if you are concerned about the weaponization of the Justice Department in the Biden years, why not investigate the Trump years?
We're going to look at threats to the First Amendment. We're going to look at this. What Elon Musk through the Twitter files has displayed is unbelievable. The idea that the FBI was paying Twitter $3.4 million to help them suppress information and keep information from the American
Twitter to comply with subpoenas.
Do you think
that's the federal law?
Do you think it was okay?
That's a law Congress passed.
Do you think it's okay for the FBI to be meeting every week and suppressing information about a conservative and suppressing the Hunter Biden story, which we know is true? Do you think that's all right? I think most Americans say, no, that's probably information we...
I understand, but
here's
this,
what
a,
I would
this
like.
A private organization here's, that made this decision.
With pressure from the government. That's the point. I can understand a private organization right. can do it. I don't think it's right, but there shouldn't be pressure from the government. Here's, when is the FBI just going to stay out of the election process? Just let we the people decide. Let the American people decide. In 2016, they spied on Trump's campaign. 2018, it was the Mueller investigation. 2020, they helped suppress the Hunter Biden story. 2022, they raided the home of a former president 91 days before an election. Maybe just let the American people decide. Maybe
just stay out. But you keep talking about this raid on Donald Trump. The amount of time, there was 9 months between the initial action that the archives made for a request of documents before they even turned it over to the Justice Department. The subpoena was issued 60 days before they actually executed the subpoena. And more importantly, the only time the public found out about it is because Donald Trump told the public about it. This was not some sort of, you paint it as a picture of the FBI did this, this, and this within hours of each other, when it was actually a year and a half of Donald Trump not complying with any of the requests from National Archives. A year and a half. This is not some sort of... proof that somehow that they've weaponized and playing politics over here.
They raided Trump's home. They haven't raided Biden's home.
Because Biden didn't defy a subpoena, Congressman. He defied a subpoena. By the way, he had 60 days to comply with the subpoena before they actually executed
the search
warrant.
President Trump had documents locked in a room with Secret Service protecting them. President Biden had documents in his garage and in a think tank that was funded by the Chinese. I think there's a difference. President Trump was the only guy who was actually president.
You talk about that. You're worried about the Chinese and Hunter Biden.
No, I'm just saying.
Are you worried about the Chinese and Donald Trump?
They took pictures. They took pictures of.
Are you at all worried about that?
No, I'm not. But they took pictures of the documents at Trump's house. They took no pictures of documents. In fact, it's not just me who would like to know what went on here. Senator Warner said it last week. He would like to get a briefing. He wants to see the documents.
No doubt.
And guess what? The FBI is saying no, but they took pictures
of the
folders
whether,
in Trump's home.
The issue is not whether Joe Biden did.
No, the issue is
the issue is
equal treatment under the law. That's the issue.
No,
equal
the issue is
treatment
you
under
do
the
not
law.
Seem to ever see the same conspiratorial problems when it's a Republican.
Those were all investigated for 4 years, and they continue
By the way,
do it.
Their Durham investigation investigated everything you're trying to investigate and came up with nothing. Do you not trust Bill Barr and Mr. Durham?
The Mueller investigation, we had 2.5 years of this, and they were going to find Russian collusion, and guess what? They can't. Even if Adam Schiff told us, Adam Schiff told us
the Durham investigation did not come up with any. They investigated all this, all these concerns that you had about the FBI, about made-up snitches, all these things. They didn't find anything. Why is it that you want to reinvestigate it?
They found that Kevin Kleinsmith altered documents, and he pled guilty to it. That's finding. When you got someone at the FBI altering documents in front of the FISA court, that's not finding anything? That's pretty important, Chuck.
They did not find what you are claiming that is out there. Why couldn't Durham find it?
The Durham investigation is not done. The Mueller investigation is done. And what did he conclude? No collusion, no conspiracy, no coordination. And we had 19 lawyers, 30 agents, $40 million spent on that, and it consumed the country for 2.5 years, and there was nothing there.
Let me ask you about subpoena compliance. You didn't comply with a subpoena from Congress. Why should you expect the Biden White House to comply with your subpoena?
Well, first of all, I never told the January 6th committee that I wouldn't come testify. What I raised is concerns. They first asked me. I sent them a letter back. I never said no. They never responded to the letter. Next thing I know, they issue me a subpoena. I send another letter back to them. I never said I wouldn't comply, but I was very reluctant to deal with these guys because we caught them lying umpteen times. Let me just give you one thing they did to me. They played a video clip when I was doing an interview between Election Day and Inauguration Day. They played a video clip where I said January 6th is the ultimate date of significance in a presidential contest. Insinuating one thing. What they left off of that clip is what I said, the front end of it. They cut the clip. What I said is the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg said January 6th is the ultimate date of significance in a presidential contest. Right. When you catch a group lying as many times as we did, and we weren't even allowed to be a part of it.
How about telling us what you talked with Donald Trump with on January 6th?
Be happy to talk to you about the concerns I had.
No, but what were your conversations?
I don't divulge conversations with my colleagues or with the President of the United States. I mean, I talk with him all the time. I talk to my colleagues all the time, but I don't divulge those conversations.
Has the current special counsel that is looking into January 6th, have they subpoenaed you for anything?
No.
Have they made any contact? If they do, will you comply?
Of course.
When should we expect the first hearing?
Our first hearing in the Judiciary Committee is going to be Tuesday or Wednesday, depending on what the minority leader does with there's a rule they have to do when we get their members and all. But we're planning on the first hearing in the full committee being on the border situation.
Do you support Kevin McCarthy throughout the entire Congress?
Kevin McCarthy's done a great job, and I supported him for speaker. I think he's going to be a great speaker.
And you will support his speakership all the way through?
Yeah, of course. I mean, he's the Speaker of the House. I think you are going to see our team come together, and Kevin has kept our team together better than any leader we've had.
Obviously, we had a lot we could have gotten to, we didn't get to. Chairman of the Judiciary Committee, thanks for coming out, sharing your views with us.
The pushback on the Biden document scandal has now had its fast and furious point. The media is wanting to make sure that they remain in control of this narrative. Now, they've let this narrative get out in the first place, so they are very, very excited about being able to choose who gets to run for president again. And this is what it's all about. This is about a flex of power, flex of control. They want to choose who gets to run for president again. They want to choose who is the person who can represent you, right? It's not enough to, like, have Donald Trump win the nomination. You have to prevent him from winning that nomination in the first place, you see. Because if Donald Trump wins the nomination for the Republican Party, well, he might become president. And we all learned that. And so there are some people who really didn't like that happening. We certainly did. But now they're doing this to Joe Biden. And now the corporate press is trying to push back on Joe Biden's classified document scandal because it's really, really hurting Joe Biden. And they want to remain in control of that narrative. And they're not going to remain in control of that narrative. And whether it's Kevin McCarthy, Jim Jordan, Mark Levin, everyone is stating that the real scandal here is not the doofus Joe Biden, who we've all seen fall, you know, down the stairs, fall off his bike, get lost walking into his own White House, right? Not his White House, but like the White House, not a big building. Joe Biden gets lost walking in there. That's not the issue, because that guy's clearly a moron. It's obvious, and it's clear. Now, you're not going to try and convince somebody that Joe Biden's a smart person or an intellectual. What is going to happen, however, is the Senate and the House are demanding the documents that were classified so that they can pair them up and match them up with emails found in Hunter Biden's laptop to see if Hunter Biden was using classified documents in order to pad the family bank accounts of the Bidens with money. And that's called corruption at its very basic level. And so that is really the investigation, not if Joe Biden is just a bumbling idiot and he doesn't know what's up and he doesn't know what the box is next to his Corvette. I mean, that's a problem. It's illegal what Joe Biden did. But more importantly, is Joe Biden complicit in the crimes of selling American secrets to our enemies abroad? I mean, that's treasonous, right? So that is what they're trying to get ahead of right now. That's why you see the pushback, and that's why we're really happy with the work Republicans are doing. Issue subpoenas, Jim Jordan. Get going.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Kudlow. I'm Larry Kudlow. So President Joe Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy are going to meet on Wednesday. Should be fun. Don't know yet if it's a lunch, a cup of coffee, a Diet Coke, or what, but it could be very productive. Mr. McCarthy has said he's going to the meeting to have a productive discussion and begin the negotiations for a debt ceiling increase that will come this summer that must include some budget spending restraint. From the Sunday talk shows, take a listen to Mr. McCarthy.
I know the president said he didn't want to have any discussions, but I think it's very important that our whole government is designed to find compromise. I want to find a reasonable and a responsible way that we can lift the debt ceiling but take control of this runaway spending.
All right, so he understands about compromise and negotiations. But on the other hand, Mr. Biden seems to have a different vision. Take a listen to this from his recent speech.
I will veto everything they send me.
I will veto everything they send me. I will veto everything they send me. Well, you can't veto everything because the House has the power of the purse, and you cannot have a spending bill or a debt bill without the House. So I would say Biden's position is both politically hostile and legislatively dumb. I'd also say Biden knows this, and he's just posturing. But you know, poll after poll shows the public wants some spending restraint alongside an orderly increase in the debt ceiling. I mean, Every single poll seems to show this. And then, in that speech last week, Biden once again was incapable of telling the truth about the economy because he says when he came into office, the economy had been reeling, quote unquote. Of course, the economy was actually growing at 6.5% with no inflation when he came into office. Meanwhile, in the past year, the economy has moved into a near recession phase, 1% growth, 6.3% inflation. The first half had two negative GDP quarters. And frankly, the outlook for the year 2023, this year, is for more negative GDP numbers. At one point last year, the inflation rate exceeded 9%, wholesale prices over 10%, and all that started when Biden's spending binge began in March of 2021. Those are factoids. And there's this bizarre tax point that Biden makes. I'm reminded of it, hat tip by the Wall Street Journal's James Freeman. Biden says Republicans want to cut taxes for billionaires who pay only 3% of their income. Then sometimes that gets changed to the wealthiest 400 billionaire families paid an average of 8% income. But all this is baloney. It is absolute malarkey. We just had a report from the IRS that shows the top 1% of wage earners paid more than 42% of all federal income taxes for the most recent year, 2020. That's what the most successful people paid. And their average tax rate was 26%, which is 8 times the tax rate faced by the bottom half of the taxpayers. By the way, since the Trump tax cuts, the share of income taxes paid by the top 1% has increased. The share paid by the lower quintiles has fallen. So Mr. Biden's typical left-wing attack on the wealthy overlooks the fact that the U.S. has the most progressive tax code among the large country economies in the OECD. And people at the bottom are virtually paying no taxes at all. The bottom 50% paid 2.3% of all income taxes. The top 50% paid 97%. Actually, 97.7%. So, we report, you decide. But putting all that aside, the Congressional Budget Office predicts that the current spending baseline would add nearly $16 trillion to the deficit over the next 10 years. And alongside this, the CBO expects the economy to grow by a meager 1.5% yearly. These are all bad numbers. And once again, I ask what would it take to get back to the 3.5% growth rate of the post-World War II period, which lasted over 50 years, and what will it take to get out of our current secular stagnation? You know, I don't pretend to have every answer, but I know that a return to a strong prosperity for all Americans is going to have something to do with less spending, less taxing, less regulating, and less inflating. Now, were I a GOP House leader, yes, of course, I would put Social Security and Medicare off the table, as they have. But I would also argue that the Republican approach for lower spending and limited government will grow the economy faster and hold down the inflation rate. In other words, high growth, low prices. The big spending Democratic approach, low growth, high prices. Let's not make this message any harder than it needs to be. So you know it's coming. Save America. Stop the spending.
Some of you are tired of all the bad news. How about some good news, even great news? Here's a bunch of senators coming to say that they support the House in limiting the purse strings and putting a debt ceiling on the government, that when it goes up and ramps against it, they will not raise the debt ceiling.
Over the past two decades, Congress has been bankrupting our nation. The American people at home, if you're fed up with inflation, if you're fed up with the cost of food skyrocketing, with the cost of electricity, of rent, of lumber, of mortgages, of gasoline, of cars, of everything you buy.
He's running for president.
It's because politicians in Washington cannot stop spending money that we don't have.
President Biden says he won't negotiate over raising the debt ceiling. I have news for him. He absolutely will negotiate.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. Last spring in March at a press conference in Brussels, Joe Biden explained that the sanctions he was imposing against Russia, while morally necessary, were also going to cause food shortages around the world, including here in the United States. It's going to be real, he said. Now, Biden said this in a very odd way. There was no hint or panic, emotions you'd expect from a leader predicting the deaths of human beings from starvation. None of that. Instead, there was pure nonchalant casualness. Biden could have been describing the weather or a trip to the dry cleaners. It's going to be real. Then, Biden continued, recounting a conversation he'd had with European allies, he told us all about it. When he met with the group, Biden said, they spoke about, quote, how we could increase and disseminate more rapidly food shortages. That's what Joe Biden said, verbatim. It's on tape. So here you have the President of the United States pledging to increase food shortages at a press conference. Now, that seemed like a newsworthy event, but not a single news organization in this country seemed to notice it happened, nor did the White House correct it. But others were watching, so within days, that clip wound up on social media, and Facebook flagged it immediately as, quote, false news. Now, strictly speaking, that's untrue. There's nothing false about the video. It was entirely real. No one can test that. But apparently, Facebook users were supposed to understand that Joe Biden is senile, and therefore he's not accountable for his own words. Taking Joe Biden literally qualifies as, quote, misinformation. Now, we'll leave that whole episode for you to assess. We can't know what Joe Biden was thinking, if anything, when he uttered those words in Brussels. We can only tell you what happened afterward. Strange disasters began to beset food processors all over the United States. In April, the next month, the headquarters of one of this country's largest organic food distributors was destroyed in a fire, cause unknown. The next month, in a single week actually, two separate private plane crashes took out two separate food processing centers. One plane hit a General Mills plant in Georgia. The other plane hit a food plant in Idaho. By the way, back in February, a boiler explosion obliterated a potato processing plant in Oregon, and so on. So even people who aren't given to connecting the dots, who don't think of themselves as conspiracy nuts, began to wonder, is there something here? But no one could tell. The Biden administration had no answers and no way to get to the answers because they had no data. And that's interesting because the Biden administration tracks a lot of things, the things that it cares about, the race and ethnicity and sex life, for example, of every person in America. Do we have enough trans-Pacific Islanders playing woodwinds in major symphonies? How about gay Southeast Asians and long-haul trucking? These are the questions that concern the bean counters in the Biden administration. And yet at the same time, that same administration keeps no real records about the infrastructure of our food supply. Apparently, that has never occurred to them. So honestly, we can't really know one way or the other because we don't have a baseline whether something strange is going on with food suppliers. But some days you do wonder. On Saturday, an enormous commercial egg farm in central Connecticut burned to the ground for no obvious reason. Huge fire. At least 20 fire departments responded, fought the blaze for over 8 hours. More than 100,000 chickens died. Now, that's a sad story, but what's interesting is that most media companies did not consider it a story at all. Weird, considering egg prices have become an actual problem for most Americans. Egg prices are up more than 100% in many places. And yet, at that exact moment, when eggs are a concern, 100,000 chickens die in a freak fire, and the New York Times, which is right next door in a neighboring state, does not even cover the fire? What is that? Don't worry! Things like this have nothing to do with egg prices, say the media. It's just avian flu. Watch.
Egg consumption has grown over the years as many people are eating them as their main protein source. But the production has slumped because of the ongoing bird or avian flu epidemic. Over the last year, the USDA says nearly 58 million birds have been infected in the U.S., making it the deadliest outbreak in U.S. history. Unfortunately, the infected birds have to be killed, causing the egg supplies to fall and prices to surge. In some cases, stores are running out and limiting the amount people can buy.
We bought eggs earlier this week here at Fry's in Levine. We paid $8.99 for a dozen eggs.
So if you ask the Agriculture Department, for example, or anyone in the Biden administration, to the extent they're paying attention, which is not much, they'll tell you that egg prices are high because avian flu, and that's a completely natural virus just like COVID. The price have nothing to do with chicken farms burning down. Again, not that anyone in the government tracks that kind of thing. Why would they? Because nothing like that could ever happen. Settle down, QAnon! And a lot of people, particularly the national news media, people who could not identify a chicken if it didn't come with dipping sauce, are satisfied with that explanation. But we noticed that some farmers who deal with chickens every day are not convinced. Some of them, some chicken farmers have noticed something odd. Their chickens aren't laying eggs or as many eggs. And these chickens don't appear sick with avian flu. They're not dying. They're still alive. They're just not producing eggs. Now, healthy hens lay eggs on a regular basis, every 24 to 26 hours. But suddenly, chicken owners all over the country, not all of them, but a lot of them, are reporting they're not getting any eggs or as many. So what's causing that? Clearly, something's causing that. Some have concluded their chicken feed may be responsible. Watch.
Is the commercial feed the reason so many people's chickens have not been laying at all? This is a question that I am asking myself, and I have seen all over TikTok, Facebook, everywhere. I'm talking about chickens, tons of people who are having no eggs for 6-7 months. Like, this is not normal. I have at least 60 hens that should be laying. I have a flock of roughly 100, and I was getting 2 to 3 eggs in the summer. All summer long, I genuinely think it's the feed, especially after seeing so many people have the same problem, switching to a local feed and it fixing itself.
Really quick. So why'd we just put that clip on TV? Because that chicken owner speaks for all chicken owners? Because she's the world's greatest expert on avian questions? Probably not. But because the people who should be keeping track of what's going on are clearly not keeping track of what's going on because they just don't care. And so instead of going to the usual sources at the Ag Department or calling the White House press office, we decided to listen to people who actually have chickens. And that one, for example, the lady you just saw says she switched her chicken feed and it solved her problem. Her chickens began laying eggs once again immediately. Now, the specific brand of feed referenced in that video is called Producer's Pride. It's made by Purina. Most chicken feed brands are made by Purina. Purina also makes Producer's Pride, that's the cattle feed, recently subject to a recall after regulators linked that product to a series of unexplained cattle deaths. It was removed from shelves because there was a good chance you shouldn't be feeding it to livestock. Could that be happening again? Now, we don't know, but we should tell you, because again, no one else seems to be keeping track of this, that it's not just Producer's Pride that some chicken owners are worried about. Some have concerns about several other chicken feed brands made by Purina. So we reached out to the company today. Again, we're agnostic on this, but we figured we would do a little poking. And they said they've looked into it too, and their feed is not the problem. And that may absolutely be true. We don't know. What we did notice, though, was that that explanation was more than enough for most media companies, trained as they are to accept corporate press releases as the final word on any given topic. Well, they said it's not a problem, so it's not a problem. We don't think that's the last word. Again, we can't tell you for certain either way. But we do know, and here's really the point, that America's food supply is one of those topics it's worth being a little paranoid about. This is not a matter of how many Trans-Pacific Islander oboists we've got. This is a matter of national survival, of food, the question on which empires rise and fall. And in this specific case, eggs, poultry, and chicken, avian products, are major sources of protein in the diets of most Americans. And you need protein to live. If you don't have enough, you get protein deficiency, and that can stunt the growth in children. So a question like this, whatever its cause, could easily flower into an actual public health crisis. And of course, it's also potentially a national security problem. There are so few eggs right now at such high cost that smugglers are trafficking eggs across our border. Watch this.
Here at the busy San Ysidro border crossing in California, word traveling fast about a new good being smuggled into the U.S. U.S. Customs and Border Protection has reported an 108% increase in seized egg products and poultry that people have tried to smuggle through U.S. ports of entry in just the last 2 months.
So are we being a little paranoid about the American food supply? Yes, we are, and we're proud of it, and our leaders should be even more paranoid always about our food supply. Food, energy, water, those are the three things that matter. The rest of it is noise. And of course, as always, they're ignoring what really matters. Subscribe to the Fox News YouTube channel to catch our nightly opens, stories that are changing the world and changing your life. I'm Tucker Carlson tonight. What we saw in the body cam footage is both horrifying, seeing poor Paul Pelosi in his 80s get hit with a hammer. It's just absolutely awful. But it's also weird,
standing there with a drink. What was that? We can't even speculate as to what that was. And then the 911 call reveals above all that the 911 operator should be fired immediately. Has there ever been a dumber 911 operator? Probably not. We can't have dumb 911 operators. It really matters. But above all, and we hate to defend NBC News, but we just got to be honest, the body cam footage completely vindicates reporting from NBC's Miguel Amaguar back in November. Here's what he reported.
Sources familiar with what unfolded in the Pelosi residence now revealing when officers responded to the high-priority call, they were seemingly unaware they'd been called to the home of the Speaker of the House. After a knock and announce, the front door was opened by Mr. Pelosi. The 82-year-old did not immediately declare an emergency or try to leave his home, but instead began walking several feet back into the foyer toward the assailant and away from police. Why Pelosi didn't try to flee or tell responding officers he was in distress is unclear.
We still don't know exactly what unfolded between Mr. Pelosi and the suspect for the 30 minutes they were alone inside that house before police arrived.
So that's kind of amazing. I mean, the guy was just doing his job. He clearly talked to someone who saw the body cam footage. Now we can see the body cam footage, and we know he was basically right. That's what it showed. So news organizations don't typically punish reporters for getting the story right, but NBC punished that guy. They suspended him. Then they deleted that report from their website. We asked NBC Today, why would they do that? But they did not respond. Of course, we didn't know the answer, which is that body cam footage, whatever else it proves, and once again, we're not exactly sure what it proves, it definitely puts a crimp in their preferred story, which was that the Pelosi household was invaded by QAnon activists or something, or this was some right-wing militia attack on the Speaker of the House's husband. That's not what it shows. And that NBC reporter was honest enough just to kind of describe what it does show. And for his efforts at telling the truth, he was suspended. Shame on NBC News.
The real issue with Paul Pelosi and this entire saga is that Paul Pelosi himself has not been forthcoming with what he did that night. The real question remains, what was going on with Paul Pelosi? And why, you know, why is he smiling in this footage? And, you know, why didn't he declare an emergency and run away? And if it's really just like that he's an older man, he's 82, and he was shocked and he just didn't know how to behave, well, then fine. I certainly don't want to be in that position, some strange guy with a hammer. But on its face, ladies and gentlemen, the secondary and tertiary scandals here are, why did the media cover up accurate reporting on Paul Pelosi? We just needed to know the information. Why did they cover up accurate reporting? And then why did they suspend reporters who engaged in that reporting? And the answer to that is pretty clear. I think we know it, that the Pelosi family and the regime media didn't want alternate narratives, even if they were true, to come out against Paul Pelosi. The Paul Pelosi narrative was supposed to be buttoned up. This was supposed to be an evil MAGA attack and not something that is, you know, anything beyond that. And what we found in the release of Paul Pelosi's footage is that it's far more complicated, strange, and confusing, and that we just need the answers. That's all. Just need the answers. No allegations here. Just needing answers to curious questions. And, well, that's what media used to do. And now media fires reporters who report truthful things about their preferred political party.
The Pfizer executive bragging on camera about how his company conducts a kind of Frankenstein, manipulating COVID viruses for profit, imperiling potentially the entire world, doing it in secret, possibly in violation of federal law, bragging about this. So no matter what your politics are, doesn't matter who you voted for, that's a huge story. And you would think every reporter in this country would be itching to follow up on it, calling Pfizer, telling the public about it. But no, that's not happening. In the 24 hours since Project Veritas posted this footage, it has been viewed more than 12 million times on Twitter. So the public is very interested. Why wouldn't they be? But the media are not. No other media outlet has covered the story at all. We checked. MSNBC and CNN, which perhaps not coincidentally take huge amounts of advertising dollars from Pfizer, those two channels have devoted a total of 0 seconds to the story. Well, just go online and find out about it. Well, Google, the biggest search engine in the world, which has a monopoly on search in this country, appears to have gone out of its way to make it much more difficult for users to learn anything about the Pfizer executive pictured in the footage. And so there is, in other words, on television and in most places online, a near total media blackout of this story. How powerful is Big Pharma? That powerful. But we have the footage, and we're going to show some of it to you tonight because we think we should. Now, that footage shows a Pfizer executive called Jordan Tristan Walker. He is, according to the documents Project Veritas posted, Pfizer's, quote, director of research and development for strategic operations and mRNA scientific planning. That's a big job. Walker is very highly educated, and as we said, he's a high-ranking executive at Pfizer. In fact, he's just two reports removed from the CEO of Pfizer, Albert Bourla. His name is Jordan Walker once again. Here he is.
You know how the virus can mutate?
Yeah.
Well, one of the things we're exploring is, like, why don't we just mutate ourselves so we could preemptively develop new vaccines, right? So we have to do that. If we're going to do that, though, there's a risk of, like, as you could imagine, no one wants to be having a pharma company mutating fucking viruses.
Yeah.
So
okay.
We're like, do we want to do this? So that's, like, one of the things we're considering.
Okay.
Like, the future, like, maybe we can, like, create new versions of the vaccines and things like that.
Okay, so Pfizer ultimately is thinking about mutating COVID?
Well, that is not what we say to the public. No.
Pfizer's thinking about mutating COVID? We're not going to say it to the public. We're quoting. One of the things we're exploring is, why don't we just mutate it ourselves so we can preemptively develop new vaccines? Now, what does that sound like? Does that sound familiar? Well, it sounds a lot like the gain-of-function research you read about, the research that was occurring at the Wuhan lab just before COVID broke out of the lab and overturned the world and wrecked the U.S. economy. That was the research that Tony Fauci lied about under oath. As The Intercept has reported, quote, scientists working under a 2014 NIH grant to the EcoHealth Alliance to study bat coronaviruses combined the genetic material from a parent coronavirus known as WIV1 with other viruses. Seven virologists told The Intercept that the research, quote, appears to meet NIH's criteria for gain-of-function research. In other words, it's exactly what it sounds like it is. So that also sounds like what Jordan Walker just described. So is Pfizer working on that right now? Well, in the clip you just saw, the Pfizer executive is careful to say it's not happening right now, but it is something that Pfizer is secretly considering without telling the public. But in another undercover video, also shot by Project Veritas, Walker suggests that research to mutate viruses is ongoing. They just don't dare call it gain of function. Watch.
When is Pfizer going to implement the mutation of all these viruses?
I don't know. It depends on how the experiments work out. Because this is like something we're buying, right?
It sounds like gain of function to me.
I don't know. It's a little bit different. I think it's different. It's like it's definitely not gain of function.
It sounds like it is. I mean, it's okay.
No. So directed evolution is very different.
Direct evolution?
Directed evolution,
okay. Well, so, I mean, is that what it is?
Maybe. Well, you're not supposed to do gain-of-function research of the viruses, like,
yeah.
They recommend not. But you do, like, these, like, selected directional mutations to try to keep it more potent.
Yeah.
So there is research ongoing about that. I don't know how that's going to work. There might not be any more outbreaks, because, like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. It's not gain of function. Oh, no, it's directed evolution. So if you're wondering how Tony Fauci was allowed to lie under oath and get away with it, the FBI did not raid his house. He was never handcuffed. Maybe it's because he used a different term for the same thing. At Pfizer, apparently, they're just calling it directed evolution. Problem solved. And again, we want to remind you what we just heard, and we're quoting the Pfizer executive. You're not supposed to do gain of function research with the viruses. We'd rather not, but we do these selected structure mutations to make them more potent. There is research ongoing about that. Oh, wow. To make the virus more potent? You don't think COVID is potent enough? Killed millions of people. Well, Walker went on to say that Pfizer is trying to keep this research hidden from the rest of us. Watch.
Tell me more, like, what's developing with the whole, you know, virus mutation process?
Well, they're still kind of conducting the experiments on it, but
It seems like from what I've heard, they're kind of optimizing it, but in the growing spokes, it was very cautious. Like, you know,
right.
Obviously, they don't want to kind of accelerate it too much.
Yeah.
But I think they're also just trying to do it as an exploratory thing, because you obviously don't want to advertise that you're kind of put out future mutations.
Yeah, you know, they're still kind of conducting experiments on it. You just don't want to advertise that you're figuring out future mutations. Figuring out future mutations. Sounds like they're causing future mutations. Now, it's obvious why this man seems a little uncomfortable at what the company he works for is doing, because the plan he describes, and we can't verify it's happening, we can only show you what its executive said, that plan could very easily cause a new pandemic and kill millions of people. And by the way, that's why gain-of-function research was banned until 2017 when Tony Fauci helped restart it. And the result was, of course, COVID. So if that happened again and anyone could trace it to Pfizer, that would destroy the company, if not the world. So Walker, in this tape, made it very clear that Pfizer is worried about a repeat of the COVID lab leak. Wait a second. We're all agreeing there was a COVID lab leak? Yeah, Pfizer's never said that in public, that the COVID strain started in the Wuhan Institute of Virology in China, where this kind of research was occurring, but apparently everyone just knows that's true. Watch.
You have to be, like, very controlled to make sure that this virus that you mutate doesn't create something that, like, you know, goes everywhere.
It's going crazy.
But it's the way that the virus started in Wuhan, to be honest. Like, it makes no sense that this virus popped out of nowhere. Like,
yeah, I know.
So we just went through this 3 years ago this month, and there was a global pandemic as a result that, again, killed millions of people and destroyed entire countries. It really hurt ours. So why would you even think about doing something like that on purpose once again? Why would you conduct this kind of research when everybody knows the consequences? Well, again, we can't say for sure. We can only tell you what Jordan Walker said. And, of course, the point is to make money.
Isn't that, like, the best business model, though? Like, just control nature before nature even happens itself, right?
Yeah, if it works.
What do you mean if it works?
Because, like, some of the times there would just be cases that pop up, right, and we're not prepared for it, like with Delta or Omicron,
right,
and things like that. So, who knows? I mean, either way, it's going to be a cash cow. COVID will probably be a cash cow for us for a while going forward. Like,
yeah.
I obviously like it.
Well, I think the whole, you know, like, research of the viruses and mutating it, like, would be the ultimate, like, cash cow.
Yeah, it would be perfect.
Now, a couple things to notice about that exchange. One, Walker's thought this through. This is not just off the top of his head. He's not stupid, and he's clearly thought through the potential consequences of this research. But he also is honest enough to admit that it could be a cash cow. And then he says, and he laughs as he says it, COVID's been a cash cow for us. So imagine two pharma executives meeting in a bar, and one is saying, how can we get kids to smoke more cigarettes? Because, you know, cancer is a cash cow for us. People would recoil in horror. And by the way, regulators would be on this. Where are the regulators? You can't just come up with a drug, claim it works, get the government to enforce people's requirement to take it. You have to go through regulators. Where are they? Why aren't they regulating a company like Pfizer? Could it be that regulatory capture is real? We don't have to guess anymore because Jordan Walker explains it for us. Watch this.
It's a revolving door for all government officials.
Wow.
Yeah, for any industry, though. For, like, in the pharma industry, all the government officials who, like, you know, review our drugs, especially yeah. Come work for pharma companies. Like, the military, like, all the, like, army and defense, like, government officials eventually go work for the defense company afterwards.
How do you feel about that revolving door? Like,
it's pretty good for the industry, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's bad for everyone else in America.
Why is it bad for everybody else?
Because if the regulators who have to approve our drugs know that once they shop being a regulator, they want to work for the company, then I'd be as hard for the company. And they were doing their job.
Right.
You work for Pfizer. My question for you is, why does Pfizer want to hide from the public the fact that they're mutating the COVID viruses?
Is this real life? I'm literally a liar. I was trying to impress a person on a date by lying.
Please, don't touch me.
Well, this is not, by the way, don't tell anybody.
Who's just working at the company to literally help the public.
So that was the end of it. James O'Keefe of Project Veritas shows up and informs Walker he's been recorded, and he's clearly upset, and of course you can understand why. He's shocked. He didn't know anyone was filming. Someone was. But what's so interesting is his first excuse is, I was lying. When, in fact, he has explained in a very sophisticated and very believable way how Washington works. We just promise to hire the regulators, and then they don't really regulate us. What you see happening in the defense industry with generals from the Pentagon happens in pharma, too. The regulators hope to get rich working here. And that's true. And no executive at a pharma company has ever been filmed saying that on camera before. That's not a lie. That's the truest thing ever spoken in Washington, D.C. And then the situation begins to degrade. So Walker, who is supposed to be a highly credentialed man of science, a clear-thinking scientist, completely loses control of himself. He becomes hysterical and violent. At one point, he calls the police to complain there are too many white people in his presence and he feels unsafe. And then, of course, he becomes violent again. Stop hitting me, he says, as he punches you in the face. Of course, it's a remarkable scene. Here's part of it.
You want to put me in jail for asking you a question?
Yes, sir.
What is the intention of calling the police?
They have, like, no one's in it right now. We're so busy.
Can I talk to you, please, about this video?
Okay, so there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 white people.
Why would you bring race into this?
Please bring the cops. Bring the cops.
Please unlock the door.
Give me white people.
Give me some stuff. Please unlock the door. Please unlock the door. Unlock the door.
Wow. Well, that didn't go well. That man doesn't seem like much of a scientist. On one hand, you can kind of feel for him. On the other hand, what was that? But more than anything, you've got questions. What was that? This guy's a pretty high-level Pfizer executive confirming a lot of things you already suspected and telling you things you had no idea were going on. So, of course, you'd want to know, what? Was that real? And what does Pfizer have to say about it? Well, no one else is calling Pfizer, so we did. We called them repeatedly today, and we asked very basic questions. Does this guy, does Walker, still work for you? And if not, when did he leave the company? And more than anything, are you actually conducting experiments or considering conducting experiments to mutate new and more dangerous coronaviruses because it would be a cash cow? And if you are doing that or thinking about doing it, have you received any U.S. government funding? Are taxpayers paying for this? And by the way, do you agree with this executive that COVID came from a lab? We didn't have complex questions, very simple ones. We called and emailed Pfizer all day. But despite their famously well-funded PR department, all the lobbying money they spend, they did not get back to us. They refused to answer. So we contacted instead Dr. Robert Malone, who's one of the inventors of the mRNA technology used in Pfizer's COVID shots. He's a world-famous expert on this subject. You can read him on Substack, and we're happy to have him join us right now. Doctor, thank you so much for coming on. So this is a very complex subject, and we're grateful that you're here. From what you saw in that tape, does it sound like Pfizer is conducting or contemplating conducting research that is effectively like gain of function?
Hi, Tucker. It's great to be here, and thanks.
Thank you.
It appears that they are recapitulating exactly what was done at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, right down to serial passage, in their case, in monkeys instead of humanized mice. But the buried lead in this, Tucker, if you don't mind me saying so,
oh, please,
is the implicit acknowledgement that they cannot construct vaccines fast enough. The virus is outrunning them, and they're having to resort to extraordinary measures. This is an acknowledgement of defeat of their vaccine technology and their platform and campaign. They're saying that we have to go so far out on the edge that we're really crossing a line. We're breaking the law. But we have no other choice because our technology is not meeting the need. We're not able to produce vaccines fast enough to get ahead of these virus mutations.
Well, that went right over my head, so thank you for calling that to our attention. Amazing. But you're describing a motive that makes some sense. It's not just about want to create an effective vaccine, but it sounds like, as you put it, they're going to exactly the place that got us COVID in the first place. Well, how is that allowed?
Precisely. So the biowarfare treaty is like a cheesecloth. It's so leaky. This is not a hard prohibition. And Pfizer is a global company that's quite clear with massive resources, the ability to conduct research in virtually any region, and, by the way, a very close relationship with the government of Israel, which is not a signatory to the biowarfare treaty. So they have all kinds of ways they can do this if this is the ethical choice, you know, or I shouldn't say the unethical choice probably, that they appear to have made. They have the ability with their money and power, as you've seen, to define the rules and construct their own reality.
I mean, the question of regulation, and this is a much longer conversation, but I, someone who was in Washington for a long time, was very struck by his description of regulatory capture at pharma and Pfizer specifically. Does that sound right to you?
Absolutely. And in fact, this is the second time that Veritas has caught somebody saying this. They caught an employee at BARDA basically saying the same thing, as I recall previously. This is widely known. It was covered in The Big Short in terms of the SEC. This is standard, as you point out correctly, this is standard practice in D.C.
I mean, you'd think Congress would pass a law, or the White House, or the agencies of regulation, if you're... If you're regulating an industry, you can't take a board seat in that industry right after leaving. Why is that hard?
Yet we have Scott Gottlieb as the poster child. He took a two-month vacation after he left the FDA and then joined the board of directors of, what was that company? Pfizer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's completely corrupt. That is corrupt. Dr. Robert Malone, thank you so much for your perspective tonight and that information.
Anytime, Tucker. Thanks for being a friend.
Appreciate it. So one of the most amazing parts of the story is that it's hard to read about it online, and big tech seems to be running interference for Pfizer and companies like Pfizer. How is that? That's not a free press. So one member of Congress says he has a plan to stop this, to stop big tech from colluding to hide meaningful information from the public. We're going to speak to that member in just a moment. The most beloved American president ever, not simply because he was a remarkable person, but because he delivered results. He saved the American middle class. He created national parks. He took apart corporate monopolies. And for those reasons, New York City had a statue of him for about 100 years, but now the city has taken it down because, by comparison, the people currently in charge don't look that impressive. So in its place, the city of New York has just erected a statue on top of a courthouse that can only be described, if you look carefully, as demonic. It depicts a woman with braids shaped as horns. Apparently, it's supposed to honor Ruth Bader Ginsburg and her unflinching support for child sacrifice. We can only guess as to what it's doing there. Jason Whitlock is the host of Fearless. We've asked him to help assess what we're looking at here. Jason, thanks so much for coming on. So, I don't think like you're a hysterical evangelical if you look at this thing and say, well, this looks like a representation, historic representation of something satanic.
Tucker, I apologize. You give me a tough act to follow. That opening segment was incredible with you and Dr. Malone exposed. And so it's a tough segue for me because I can't take this statue and the left seriously. They're a joke, and so all I can think of is jokes. And so I just have to think that if this is what they did for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and we've seen what they did for Martin Luther King in Boston, yeah, can you imagine what they're planning for Ketanji Brown Jackson? My God, I'm sure they're building the first non-binary, multiple gender statue that will depict Ketanji Brown Jackson probably holding her crotch and listing her pronouns as D's Walnuts. I mean, I can just imagine what Wellesley College is thinking right now about Hillary Clinton. She graduated from Wellesley College. She's the real 45, and I heard they have a statue planned for her, the real 45. Hillary will be depicted swigging from a brown paper bag containing a bottle of Colt 45 malt liquor. from what I understand, I've been told, the WNBA, they're planning a statue for the greatest war prisoner since John McCain, Brittany Griner. Of course, you remember her, the political prisoner in
Very
Russia.
Well.
They're planning a statue for her, 6'8" statue. She'll be inhaling from a giant bong while she's waiting in the green room of Bill Maher's deal. And so they're going to celebrate Brittany Griner. And Tucker, this is a family show, so I'm not going to go into details about how San Francisco plans to honor Nancy Pelosi and those giant cans she bought with her insider trading money. But I can tell you that Paul Pelosi's hammer will be part of the erection.
So I actually look forward to all the statues. You just completely – the Hillary Clinton hitting the brown paper bag, Hillary as wino. I mean, I can't wait for that. Thank you. Jason Whitlock, you improved my mood dramatically. Great to see you.
Thank you.
It was tough to believe we live in a country where you could be fired from your job having the wrong thoughts or reading unapproved political materials, but unfortunately that is the country we're becoming. It happened to Carol Lynn. She used to work for a small games company called Limited Run Games. Then the mob found out that she followed certain forbidden Twitter accounts, including libs of TikTok. Now this mob, and this is usually the case, was led by a single activist on Twitter, along with a small message board called Reset Era. As a result of this mob action, Carol Lynn was fired. We want to understand exactly why and what happened. Carol Lynn joins us tonight. Carol, thank you so much for coming on. Do we oversimplify that? So you followed the wrong people on Twitter and lost your job for it?
To me, I think that's kind of the what sums it up. The funny thing about it is it's accounts that I follow accounts of every political affiliation, and I'm the type of person who likes to see from every direction, and so I follow a variety of accounts.
when they called you in to fire you, did they say we believe you've been reading the wrong things? Like how did they phrase it?
No. It was more of the publicity that was getting it. That was the main thing. They had no qualms with who I followed or anything like that.
But you lost your job as a result of it.
Yes.
Well, I mean that's not supposed to happen in a free country with a First Amendment, right?
I would hope not.
Yeah, but it did. You're so good-humored about it. I mean, I'm like outraged on your behalf. I hope that the lesson you take is you go follow even more forbidden Twitter accounts and that you make more money and an even better job. We are rooting for you. Carolyn, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
So crime is so bad in the city of Chicago, you don't need to be an ideologue to notice it. All kinds of people are noticing, and they're leaving Chicago. Lori Lightfoot is the main reason for that. She's the current failed mayor. She's up for re-election. So running against her is a businessman who doesn't like crime and wants to stop it. And we're very intrigued by that, so we're going to talk to him next. The city of Chicago, a great city, has become so dangerous people can't live there. And Lori Lightfoot's the mayor of that city. She's one of the reasons it's so dangerous. She was asked the other day about street vendors being robbed, and she said, well, they shouldn't carry cash. She also thinks the police should not be allowed to chase criminals on foot. But she is up for re-election right about now, very soon, and in a debate this month, the candidate who's running against her, called Willie Wilson, for a different solution for stopping crime. Here it is.
We'll be tough on crime. We'll move all the restriction things from our police officer. Somebody run, chase somebody by foot or car, that police officer should be able to chase them down and hunt them down like a rabbit.
Willie Wilson, a candidate for mayor of Chicago, our preferred candidate, an American hero, joins us tonight. Mr. Wilson, thank you so much for coming on. So when you said that police should be able to chase down criminals like rabbits, obviously we cheered. Did you mean that?
Well, here's what I meant. I lost a 20-year-old son. He was murdered by a gun. These people need to be caught. Too many restrictions on the police department. We need to take the handcuffs off the police officer and put them on the people who's actually doing it. And it needs to stop now. This particular mayor that we have right now just keep coming up with excuses. But people keep dying on the street. Nobody doing anything about it but excuses. So, no, when we become mayor of the city of Chicago, we're going to put a stop to this crime. We're going to take them back, our police officer, men and women, and get the job done. I'm tired of it. I don't want to see no other family to go through what I've been through, the loss of a son or lose a daughter or something of that nature. We're going to stop it.
I mean, crime is voluntary. You get exactly as much as you put up with. Everyone knows that. You're saying it out loud. You've been attacked for saying it by the media in Chicago, despicably. Most voters must agree with you, though, I would think.
Well, you know, it's basically how I feel. I'm tired of it. When you lose someone, the loved one, okay, you act out of your emotion, okay?
Yeah.
But we're like crooks. Turn around the next week or the next day and commit a crime to someone else. A mayor's first duty is protect its citizen, you know?
Yes.
And she getting paid to do a job. If she cannot do her job, when you get paid to do a job and you cannot do it, you need to be fired. Just point blank. We do that in corporate America, you know?
Yeah.
But this mayor is the worst mayor that I think she'll go down in history. You know, we have to back our police officers, take the handcuffs off them, take some of these rules, take some of these policies off them, get them days off, make sure we treat them like heroes that goes out and protect us. And we must do this on a continuous basis. And we must make sure that the police officers respect us and the citizens respect them. Right now, the police officer do something, they're too afraid. If they do something, they'll get locked up.
Of course.
You cannot do your job that way, you know? And look, crime has no color, you know? When you commit a crime, it's hurt, you know? So it has no color. But if this mayor here cannot do the job, keep making excuses after excuses. People are tired and sick of this stuff. I'm one that running for mayor. I don't want a paycheck, nothing, okay? I don't want to fix the problem for our citizen. I want to make sure to encourage our police officer that know, look, we got their back covered. And those people who run the street going to commit crime again, we're going to catch them. We're going to catch them, and we're going to make sure that they pay for what they have done. And let's get this whole situation right.
Yeah. Well, you'll solve the problem. Wilson running for the mayor of Chicago very soon. Thank you so much. So in case you're wondering what's really going on, at the same moment this left is absolutely determined to sexualize your children, they are refusing to punish pedophiles and sex offenders. One lawmaker in New Mexico has a plan to change that. Joins us after the break to explain. Democrats 30 years ago would be shocked at what has happened to their party. If they could fast forward decades, they wouldn't recognize it. All of a sudden, the party as a party is aggressively sexualizing children, not just drag queen story hours, not just the mutilation of children, sexual mutilation, the name of gender ideology, but pushing graphic sexualization in schools on little kids. And at the same time, many of our leaders are refusing to punish pedophiles. So Stephanie Lord is a state representative in New Mexico and has noticed this, and she's tried to get a couple of bills passed that punish child sex abusers, and they've been rejected by Democrats. So now she has a new idea. Her idea is chemical castration isn't just for kids. How about doing it to pedophiles too? Stephanie Lord is a New Mexico state representative. She joins us tonight. Stephanie, thank you so much for coming on. So rather than have us characterize your idea, if you wouldn't mind explaining what it is.
Thank you, Tucker. It's an honor to be on your show, and I'm very grateful to be here, and I'm glad you're giving me this opportunity to talk about this. So I want to make something really clear. In New Mexico, the majority of people in our state are moderate Democrats, but unfortunately we've got some progressive Democrats that are pushing forward some radical ideology. So my first session when I was up here, there was quite a few bills to be soft on criminals, let criminals out, give them, you know, special things that they wouldn't normally have. So I kept presenting amendments that said, okay, well, you want to let the criminals out early. How about not pedophiles? How about we don't be nice and don't give them special treatment?
Yeah.
How about that? And so I even presented an amendment about let's not let them cut children's hair, because that idea actually disgusts me, to have them put their hands on children. And every amendment was shot down, literally. So it really got me thinking, so what can I do? What is something that I can do in this next session when I got reelected? What can I do? And I happened to see this bill in Tennessee that was based off the Alabama bill on chemical castration. I looked at it, I thought, this is a great idea. This is a way to, a tool that we can use to keep these pedophiles away from our children. That's all that I wanted. That's all I ever wanted out of this.
So have you considered calling it puberty blockers? If you did that, maybe every Democrat in New Mexico would vote for it.
It's the few progressives that we have, because we have some actually really good Democrats. But the progressive ideology has taken over, and it's frustrating because I was a Democrat until 1997. I don't even recognize the party anymore. But, yeah, you know, the whole goal for me, I'm very passionate, and it comes from my heart. I just don't want pedophiles to get any special treatment or to be allowed early out of prison.
Well, I've got to think, I know New Mexico, and you're right, it's a very moderate state, mostly Democrats. I would think the majority of people in New Mexico, the voters would be in favor of this.
Yes, I think the voters are definitely in favor of this, because I don't know anybody that's on the side of pedophiles. The problem is that I have more leeway on my side of the party. I can disagree with my party all day long, and I do. They'll tell you that. If I don't feel that something is correct or right for my district, I won't vote for them. But I think there's more of a push on their side where they have to align, and it's all or nothing.
Yeah.
So I think they got some pushback on that. And that's really unfortunate. That's really, really unfortunate.
Yeah, I think that's a really smart insight. They stick together. That's where their power is. They know it. And it works, unfortunately. Stephanie Lord, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
So we open the show. Bill Gates, remember him from Windows, from the paperclip, from the farming, from the medications, has been spitting truths about vaccines that we're astonished we're even allowed to show on this platform. And he predicts that the next pandemic could be man-made. Something to look forward to, and so different from the last one. Here's something that's going to astonish you in the light of recent events. Bill Gates talking about vaccines.
The current vaccines are not infection blocking.
They're not blocking infections. No, they don't do that. Okay, but I thought I remember. No, you don't remember anything. But are they broad?
They're not broad.
Oh, they're not broad. Okay. Anything else?
So when new variants come up, you lose protection.
Oh, so if there are any variants, you lose protection. Suppose they must at least work for a long time.
And they have very short duration.
Oh, okay. So what do they do? Am I allowed to ask that? If vaccines are as Bill Gates there, not me, Bill Gates seems to think they are, then you have to wonder why he's so keen to protect those patents. Hey, we don't want you imitating our vaccines. Make your own vaccines. Poo! Maybe the vaccines for this pandemic didn't turn out to be as we were initially told. Am I allowed to say that? But don't worry, because there's always a new opportunity for people that are hustling on the front line of globalist big business, and the next pandemic is just around the corner. At least that's what the global elite is praying for, whether it's at Davos or that other global entrepreneur and titan, Bill Gates. Bill Gates has warned Australia to be ready for the next pandemic, which could be man-made and far more brutal. Bloody hell, that's not a very cheery thing to say to the people of Australia. Haven't they dealt with enough lately? Mr. Gates told the Lowy Institute think tank in Sydney on Monday that political leaders needed to set aside their differences and work together to prepare for the next virus. Nearly exactly our message, except his one leads to pharmaceutical solutions that require centralized power, and ours lead to democratic solutions that lead to people power. He called for greater global cooperation, using the COVID-19 pandemic as an example of how countries could improve on their response if they work together. That is
a cry for centralized authority. They can improve their response if they work together. I know on Sesame Street, that would sound like a fantastic sentiment. Oh, what should we do? Firstly, get Elmo vaccinated. And then what should we do? Well, we'll just all work together, Mr. Snuffleupagus, Big Bird. What's being described there and presented as sort of harmonious, emphatic, kumbaya, me lord style, let's hold hands, is centralized authority. And unelected organizations like the Gates Foundation and the WHO and the WEF being able to come together in little think tanks and come up with ideas and suggestions and solutions, which, by the way, never disrupt the interests of the powerful. By the way, never inhibit the ability of big tech to surveil, big government to regulate, big pharma to profit. No ideas, even when they're talking about climate, flying there in private jets. Never any solutions like, why don't you stop flying around in private jets, if indeed that's what you care about. What their agenda is how do we keep control, continue to profit, and never interrupt the trajectory of our domination? You'll never hear a suggestion coming out of there like, look, we've done a lot of reflection in the old think tank and I'm not going to have a private jet anymore. I can't justify it. I can't go around the world talking like this and still have a private jet. It's wrong. Or I'm going to get rid of the private jet. No, can I not shut up and keep the private jet? Yeah, but no one's going to trust you. Mr. Gates praised Australia's policies in helping to keep infection rates low before vaccines were rolled out. Do you live in Australia? What was your experience like? How did you enjoy the internment camps? What's it like being in Australia? Are you proud? Are you happy of your country's response? What about you, people in Canada, other liberal democracies that pride yourselves on being lands of freedom and tolerance and openness and inclusivity built after post-colonialism with new and inclusive dreams? How do you feel about this? Isn't it pretty obvious that the new information age means it's difficult to control information, the new ability to communicate means it's impossible to stop radicalism, and therefore centralized authority needs to create ways in which to legitimize its ongoing power? Isn't that what's happening? Do you think that's what's happening? Let me know in the comments. He also said US policy, and by extension Australia's, which is weird, towards China, wow, one unilateral policy there between the US and Australia, even though Australia has a different historical relationship with China, different geographical relationship with China, why would there be one centralized agenda towards China? Why would there be? Needed a more conciliatory and cooperative political approach in tackling major problems. I see China's rise as a huge win for the world. Do you see China's lockdown response as a huge win for the world? Bags of dead cats, tower blocks of people sobbing. Ah, kumbaya, my lord. But the big headline from Bill Gates' think tank hoedown was that the next pandemic could be man-made. Man-made pandemic? Are we allowed to discuss that here? What about the last pandemic and its origins? Has that narrative altered? Is there more evidence? Are we allowed to have a conversation about that? According to a new report in The Intercept, Dr. Anthony Fauci conspired with influential scientists around the world, including at the World Health Organization, to quell concerns that SARS-CoV-2 may have leaked from the Wuhan Institute of Virology, newly unredacted emails show. The newly released emails raise questions about Dr. Fauci's motives in dispelling public scrutiny over the potential that the novel coronavirus had escaped from the Wuhan laboratory. Fauci had misled Congress over the extent that the National Institute of Health had funded the Wuhan lab as a subcontractor of EcoHealth Alliance. The Wuhan laboratory was also funded by the Pentagon contract award show. The unredacted NIH emails show how public questioning that SARS-CoV-2 may have escaped from a laboratory was a concern for the group's scientists, lest it become a conspiracy theory. Oh, you don't want that coming out, in case it becomes a conspiracy theory. But also, more of a concern that it could become a conspiracy theory is that there's all sorts of integral, actual, demonstrable relationships between interests that ought be declared explicit and made public, because otherwise, not only is that lacking in transparency, it is a conspiracy. Bill Gates wants more cooperation between these organizations. How much more cooperation? Do them all to move into one house and get married to each other? They seem to be cooperating just fine. Emails were exchanged among Dr. Anthony Fauci, the National Institute for Allergy and Infectious Diseases chief, Sir Jeremy Farrar, a top scientist at the World Health Organization, Christian Anderson, a leading immunologist and microbiologist with Scripps Research, Professor Edward Holmes, a biologist at the University of Sydney, Dr. Francis Collins, former director of the National Institute of Health, Chris Elias of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, George Fu Gao of the Chinese Center for Disease Control and Prevention, Victor J. Zhao of Duke University, and various other influential scientists and philanthropists around the world. It's an interesting collusion between state-funded organizations, unelected globalist entities like the WHO, and private foundations that are often presented as primarily philanthropic rather than political organizations that are about asserting control or looking to exert influence. That list in itself, unless it led to transparent communication, I think is cause for scrutiny and concern. Remember, in the early days of the pandemic, there was a clear attempt to control the narrative. All of this inquiry about the possible Wuhan lab origin was completely suppressed. Many of you will have seen Jon Stewart's joke on TV saying it's kind of ludicrous that it's not being discussed when there's an Institute of Virology that bears the same name as the place of origin. It's very peculiar. And to know that these people, people that operate in the upper echelons, this is what people mean by the elite. There are powerful institutions, some governmental, some private and corporate, some media-oriented, and conspiracy theorists believe that they communicate with one another in order to establish an agenda and push particular stories and narratives in order to prevent democratic control being meaningful. Let me know if you think that any red flags will be raised around that little list. The academic paper, The Proximal Origin of SARS-CoV-2, published on March 17, 2021, had definitively propped up the rival theory to the lab leak theory that SARS-CoV-2 had natural origins. But the final form of the paper was far afield of its initial stages, as shown by the NIH emails. The influential academic paper evolved from its early stages, seriously entertaining three rival hypotheses, the bioengineered theory, the lab leak theory, and the natural origins theory, which seems to me, by the way, how science ought to be conducted. And if you genuinely were interested in creating a clear and open relationship with the public, which I would assume is necessary during a time of pandemic which requires cooperation, it seems to me that they were confronted with the idea that cooperation was required and chose a different path, management of the narrative, management of the information, and then have the gall to complain about the rise of conspiracy theories when continually information keeps coming to the surface to suggest that much of what was previously adjudged as conspiracy theory territory was actually an alternative truth and in many cases now a more valid one. To one that attempted to close the book on public inquiry into the possibility that SARS-CoV-2 had escaped from the Wuhan laboratory. Now if you have a bias towards a particular outcome and you want to prevent people reaching a particular conclusion, in this case the idea that CoV-2 had escaped from the Wuhan laboratory when it was a serious theory under contention, even under their own analysis, the next line of inquiry that you have to undertake is why? Why did they not want that line of inquiry to be investigated? Well, let's just have some speculation and conjecture. Because it would diminish public trust in the kind of organizations that funded that research, especially to learn that the people that funded that research are now being charged with the response to the pandemic. It would make us further query how much we could trust Big Pharma. It might, in fact, make us want to hold Big Pharma to account when it comes to profitability. It would damage further our trust in public institutions. Well, now it seems that all of these ideas were at least legitimate cause for speculation, if not entirely verifiable. The evolution was due in no small part to the feedback from Dr. Andy Fauci, Dr. Francis Collins, and Sir Jeremy Farrow, the unredacted email shown. Evolution, like it was just like, oh, natural selection. It's not natural selection if the head of the NIH is going, don't put that bit in, exclude that. That's much more God. That's intelligent design, not evolution. Follow the science. The academic paper upon publication was soon weaponized by the mainstream press to attack critics of the Wuhan laboratory as conspiracy theorists, but behind the scenes, the authors themselves were taking the possibility that the virus escaped from a laboratory more seriously. So even they themselves knew it was a legitimate possibility, while we, you, were being told, no, no, you're a conspiracy theorist. Right, so just some more research in that, because it actually could have been that. That was the reality. I'm not even saying it came from that lab. I'm saying that they thought that it might come from that lab. I'm not even saying those vaccines. I'm saying Bill Gates is saying that those vaccines. I'm not even saying that the next pandemic might be man-made. Bill Gates is saying that the next pandemic might be man-made. This, along with information that's being leaked, which at this point we can't include in these videos until it's more verified and we're more confident in it, suggests that even some of the more extreme ideas that are discussed have some truth and authority to them. So clearly gain of function is somewhat controversial, and clearly even according to organizations like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, WHO, NIH, all of those organizations listed, is potentially contentious and I would say potentially dangerous. It's good to know that the NIH aren't carrying on with gain of function research, and if they are, I want to be damn sure that it's not vague or secretive. You want it out there and explicit and clear. The National Institute of Health, formerly headed up by Anthony Fauci, should improve how it regulates lab-generated viruses that could pose a national security risk, according to its biosecurity advisors. Sometimes I think that actually we have conversation at a particular level, but really the conversation should be happening like way down deeper. And this is an example of that. Like, stop doing that research. Like, why are we not having that conversation? The National Science Advisory Board for Biosecurity highlighted wide gaps in the oversight of controversial projects that create enhanced pandemic potential pathogens in preliminary recommendations to the NIH. That means it might cause a pandemic. Privately funded research that risks causing a pandemic occurs largely in the shadows, the group found.
Okay, we got to do some research. We're dealing with tiny, weeny little microbial things and tiny little tweezers and stuff like that. It is dangerous. I've been in the back caves extracting stuff from bats. It's dangerous. So, let's get into the laboratory. Now, where have you built that laboratory?
Here, in the shadows.
Oh, well, that's great, because, you know, as we all know, in shadows, those are the perfect conditions for working with tiny little microbial substances.
Meanwhile, NIH-funded research with pandemic risks is falling through the cracks of the agency's vague internal processes. How can they be so confident when they were saying, like, it can't have come from a lab? You ain't got any cracks in your vague model. It's full of cracks. Could it have gone down any of the cracks? No. Could it?
Yeah.
Don't have cracks.
On paper, NIH-funded projects that could pose a pandemic risk are subject to an extra layer of regulatory review by the Enhanced Pandemic Potential Pathogens Committee, or P3CO.
Master Luke, don't put that research by the cracks. Shut up, 3PO. No, R2. I don't think we should tell the public what we're doing. It's none of their business. I don't think that I am in this for the money. Don't be so rude about Pfizer. What do you mean it's none of Bill Gates' business? Listen, I prefer the Ewoks.
In practice, the NIH refers few research projects for closer scrutiny, the NSABB says, echoing the concerns of non-partisan experts. So experts that ain't got any skin in the game say, listen, you've got to be very, very careful with this type of research. And they say that you don't have to. Opinion is divided on the subject. Impartial experts say there should be scrutiny. Paid for and bought up experts say do what you want. In rare instances where projects are referred for review by the P3CO, the deliberation occurs in secret. Oh, good. The composition of the P3CO is unknown to anyone outside of the process except for the NSABB and a few members of Congress.
Master Luke, you don't think us keeping this all secret will lead people to think that we're somehow profiteering, introducing regulation, not being honest about the risks and gain of function, the possibility that the last pandemic could come from a lab, that this research could lead to more pandemics coming?
Oh, that's a very good point, R2.
So there you have it. Whether it's Bill Gates or the NIH, new information is coming to the forefront that appears to verify and validate some of the most extreme conspiracy theories of just a couple of years ago. This doesn't mean that we should all be marching around saying, I'm right, thumping our chests and fist bumping and fist pumping. It simply means that we must stay alert and stay awake. Extend a hand of friendship. Make sure you've washed it first, though. Maybe that don't matter either. To people that you formerly disagreed with, be willing to open your heart, but do demand truth and demand to be treated like an adult, which ultimately means we have to behave like adults. We have to be responsible, awake, transparent, and clear. Let us demonstrate to them how we want to be governed, how we want to be led. Ultimately, that we should be governed and led by ourselves. But that's just what I think. Let me know what you think in the comments below. Turn on the notification bell and subscribe right now. We make great content every day and it's vital that you see it all. We're on Rumble every single day at 5 with a fantastic live show where we cover these issues in depth with